That's Eric Reed, R-E-E-D, on piano, opening up with Ahmad's Blues, composed by the great one himself, Ahmad Jamal. It's from Eric Reed's 1995 Motown recording, The Swing and I. Ben Wolfe on bass and Gregory Hutchinson on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and a program I hope you will enjoy today. We start first with Haiti, where a 5-member independent council that was charged with oversight of Haiti's contentious presidential election, remember we talked about that with our guide who returns with us today, yesterday released its finding that the election was so fraught with fraud, only a new election would restore voter confidence. Our guide, as I said, is Kim Ives, editor of Haiti Liberté, who has been reporting on Haiti and related developments right here on Lead Stories with us. And he's here to tell us about this very significant development as recently as yesterday and the ripple effects it appears to be causing, including within the Obama administration. Kim, thanks so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure to join you, Yatrice.
Thank you. Well, this is a very major development. So take us methodically through what happened yesterday and what led up to it and what the ripple effects are.
Well, in fact, it was Monday that the Monday evening the report was released, even though yesterday was when most of the news started to hit about it. Essentially, to understand what's happened, we have to backtrack to the regime of Michel Martelly, who was the previous president, basically installed by Hillary Clinton and Washington back in 2011. And we can review that if we need to. And his government never held elections during his 5 years in power, until the very end when there was an uprising essentially across the country in late 2014. And in 2015, he was forced basically to hold the elections, which were held on August 9th and October 25th. But these two sets of elections were so patently fraudulent and marred by violence and all sorts of disorder that the people rose up on January 22nd of 2016, 2 days before the third and final round of those elections were to take place, and said, we're not going to have it. And basically, Washington and the Martelly regime had to step back. And Martelly rather ignominiously had to step down on February 7th, and he was replaced by a provisional president by the name of Joslim Privert. And Joslim Privert was a former political prisoner. He'd been an interior minister under President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 2004. When the U.S. Again backed a coup d'etat against Aristide. And basically, Prévert had spent 2 years in prison. And he came to power. He had been the president of the Senate. And they said, you will be the provisional president in the meantime. And the call of all the leading runners-up in the election, the presidential runners-up in the election of October 25th, was that there be a verification commission to see what happened in the August 9th and October 25th elections. And the Martelly regime had done sort of a partial one, a very controversial one, but even that commission found that the elections were no good, but didn't give any precise recommendations. So when Prévert finally managed to name his independent commission, they met for 1 month, the past month basically, and reviewed one quarter of the voter tally sheets. That's about 3,235 voter sheets. And they found that the fraud was so pervasive that, in the words of one verification committee member, there were more dead people that voted than living. And these were what they call zombie votes, essentially votes which could not be traced to any person or to people, in fact, who were in fact dead. So the zombie votes far outnumbered the votes by actual individuals. And so they said, listen, this whole election has to be thrown out. And they were speaking about the presidential election. Now, the one last thing I'll mention is that the parliamentary elections were equally fraudulent and equally marred by violence. And although they include in their 105-page report, so it's quite exhaustive, accounts of how the various deputies and senators arrived in power, often through very clear and patent fraud and violence, they nonetheless just told the victims of those shenanigans to go back to the what they call the Bureau of, I don't have it in front of me, but the Bureau of Contesting Elections, the BCEN, and the BCEN will rule on it. But most of these candidates who were victim of fraud have already gone to the BCEN, albeit of a previous electoral council, and they found, in general, that it was a kangaroo court. Basically, the fix was in, and they felt that no justice was forthcoming. So they are a little bit questioning whether it's not going to be the same thing under the new CEP. And why, might they ask that? It's because the new CEP, which replaced the old CEP, when I say CEP, that's again Provisional Electoral Council, that's the French acronym. The old CEP was headed by a guy called Opon Pierre-Louis, and it was basically completely discredited, and they all had to resign in disgrace. But the new CEP is headed by a guy called Léopold Berlinguer, who is perhaps the foremost longtime Washington ally, basically a media slash political strongman, who is very likely to be sympathetic to Washington's argument that this is basically a dilatory tactic and unnecessary, and we should just go forward with the results of the October 25th and August 9th elections, because it won't make any difference. Still, the two people who came out on top would come out on top again. And those two people were, one, surprise, surprise, Michel Martelly's hand-picked candidate, a guy called Jovenel Moïse of the PHTK, as Martelly's party is called. And the other one is Jude Celestin of the La Paix party, which is affiliated with the Préval, former president René Préval. And just to finish up, those two parties represent, in the eyes of the U.S., in the mind of the U.S., kind of the polyarchy, as they call it, where you have these two elite parties, just like we have here in the U.S., two elite parties who alternate power. The PHTK would be sort of the Republican, and the La Paix party would be sort of the Democrats. And so Washington favors keeping it there and not going to the third and fourth candidates, for example, who were respectively Moïse Jean-Charles and Maryse Narcisse, both of two Lavalas currents. When I say Lavalas, I'm talking about the sort of movement in general. Moïse Jean-Charles represents a party called the Petit Dessalines, the Children of Dessalines, who was the Haitian founding father, a very fierce nationalist. And the second would be Maryse Narcisse of the Lavalas Family Party, which was founded by Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 1996. So the U.S. doesn't want anything to do with either of those candidates, and that is why they would like to just keep it Jovenel Moïse versus Jude Celestin contest.
Well, Washington reacted very interestingly yesterday to the news that the provisional, the independent counsel, reviewing the results of the election, came up with a recommendation that it should be a do-over. What was Washington's reaction?
Well, Washington's reaction was basically to ignore it, I think hoping it would go away, and to in fact threaten Haiti. And yesterday in a press briefing in Washington, the State Department spokesperson said, well, this is a Haiti, I don't have it in front of me, it is in this week's Haiti Liberté newspaper, but he had a statement to the effect that even though this is a Haitian-run affair, and we can put air quotes around Haitian-run, the longer they take to get a president in place means the longer they will wait for U.S. partnership in helping Haiti with all the terrible things it's enduring right now. And those include terrible rains, flooding, a cholera epidemic, which was imported, by the way, by the U.N. peacekeeping troops still occupying the country today, 12 years to the day. Today is the 12th anniversary of their deployment in Haiti in 2004, and cholera is the principal thing they brought to the country. And there is, in fact, Eutrice, a famine going on in Haiti. It is growing, especially in the northwest and north, but there's a lot of people hungry and starving. And so the U.S. is saying, well, you don't put in a president, don't look to us for any help.
One can't help but see the irony here of the role of the Clintons in the continuing debacle in Haiti and the resistance by Haitians to imposed orders with which they have very little, if anything, to do with. You mentioned Bill Clinton. We can't separate Bill Clinton from the coup against Aristide in 91. You mentioned the immediate past president, Michel Martelly, personally installed by Hillary Clinton. To what degree do you see the hand of the Clintons in the ongoing crisis of democracy in Haiti?
Well, to me, of course, as you just recalled for the listeners, the role of Hillary Clinton in installing Michel Martelly, who had basically given us this situation, is very important. But to me, overall, the Obama administration and the sort of Democratic establishment, they're just extensions of the Clinton machine. These are all basically the faces of the establishment that we are now seeing an uprising against in the form of the Sanders movement and to some extent even the Trump movement. The people are just fed up with their way of waging war around the world, in some cases low intensity in the case of Haiti and other places like Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan, high intensity. So I think the Clintons have nonetheless presented themselves as sort of the, how could we say, saviors, quote-unquote, of Haiti, pretending to come during the earthquake and provide relief. There was some, the figures often shift around. Sometimes people say 6 billion, sometimes people say 10. I prefer to go with about 13 billion. I think that was the amount of overall worldwide international aid that went to Haiti that Bill Clinton more or less oversaw. And what was the result of it? It was essentially a luxury hotel and a sweatshop park in the north, far from the earthquake area. So this is primarily the role that the Clintons have played, is to put a happy face on this terrible, terrible situation.
But also to completely ignore, and the media have not really made the connection that you have made for us in showing the links between the Clintons and essentially the erosion of democracy, everything possible to derail it and erode it in Haiti, to subvert the people's will, and to essentially maintain a colonial stranglehold on Haiti, even as it just rakes as much profit out of Haiti as possible through the Clinton Foundation. So this is a really interesting development.
One thing I would add is, again, people have to remember the premise of Bill Clinton, his tenet, if you will, is that you can do well doing good. That is a euphemism for capitalism works. Capitalism can save the world. And I think most people have seen very clearly now that the exact opposite is the case. And in essence, the team that the Clintons brought in with Martelly and his prime minister, Laurent Lamothe, their slogan was, Haiti is open for business. And now we've seen this situation where, just like we've seen in other countries, including our own, the nation has been left completely gutted, if you will, by these sharks who have come in, made a lot of money, often on sweetheart contracts, no-bid contracts. They emptied the Petrocaribe account of $1.5 billion that the Venezuelans had set up. This was essentially an account where oil and gas was provided to Haiti, and then they only had to pay for 60% of it, and 40% of it would go into this account, which could be used for investing in social projects and things to uplift the poor and et cetera. And essentially, the Martelly regime tore through this money, burned through it, giving it to themselves and their cronies, and the result is now that as Venezuela is hard-pressed itself, that you have this account emptied, and Haiti owes now almost a year's arrears in payments to Venezuela for oil and gas.
Why don't we have a review of by established U.S. entities of the role of the United States in eroding democracy and the people's will in Haiti? I'm thinking, for example, Jimmy Carter type organization basically auditing a Clinton Global Initiative type organization. And in the interest of saying, well, we have been doing a consistently bad job, and not only that, we are fleecing this country and creating more problems. You mentioned at the top of the discussion today that it is the 12th year since UN peacekeeping troops have been in Haiti and brought with them cholera. That has been proven.
Right.
So you have all, in so many ways, you know, the people are being subjected to all manner of of hardship.
And Utrice, if I can just enter one incredible irony, I mean, it just it's mind-boggling. Here is this UN peacekeeping force, which in general costs about $800 million a year to deploy. It has varied in size from 2 or 3,000 to up to 13,000. Again, these are troops from Sri Lanka and Argentina, Brazil. At one point, Uruguay was sending troops. So they wound that down. But from countries around the world, and these troops introduced cholera into the country. What did the UN do? Instead of addressing and taking responsibility for bringing cholera into the country, they refuse, in the face of three different lawsuits now being carried out in the state of New York against them, they refuse to accept responsibility and say that it was their troops' sewage, which flowed into the headwaters of Haiti's largest river, which caused the epidemic. And they said, we're launching a $1.2 billion campaign to, you know, improve Haiti's sanitation system. How much have they raised for that $1.2 million campaign? Less than 15%. And all the while, they're sending these troops to Haiti. I mean, if they just eliminated the troops and did as President Preval said back in 2006, send us not tanks, send us bulldozers. Help us rebuild the country. No, they prefer to send the tanks, the guns, and keep the people at the end of an M16 rather than rebuild their water and sanitation systems.
Well, the crisis clearly has been codified and it has been verified by this independent council, and they have made their recommendation. What happens now for about this do-over of the election?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, of course. The decision, the council is simply making a recommendation. They have no executive power. They have no way to enforce their finding. The decision will be made by this CEP, and lo and behold, this U.S. agent, a guy by the name, again, of Leopold Berlanger, is the president of that CEP. So it is extremely unlikely that they are going to take the council's recommendation in whole, and, you know, they may try to find some way to make some sort of lip service towards it. I've since stopped driving, as people can probably hear, the blinkers and so forth have stopped. So I can now read for you actually the statement of State Department spokes spokesman, John Kirby, quote, although this is a Haitian-led process, the longer it takes for Haiti to have a democratically elected president, the longer it's going to take for the United States to consider new elements of partnership in helping Haiti confront the mounting economic, climate, and health challenges that they continue to face today. So here, in that beautiful velvet glove, is the iron fist of the U.S. saying, do what we're telling you, and put in our candidates, so one of our candidates, either Jovenel Moïse or Jude Celestin, or, you know, we're going to basically put an embargo on any aid to help you with the cholera crisis that we brought and the economic crisis which we brought. So I think the CAP, which has the final decision, we expect that this week, this coming week, they're looking around June 6th. They said that they would give some kind of date for elections. They didn't say what elections. Was it going to be another a runoff on the basis of the first two rounds of 2015, or was it going to be an all-new election as the Verification Commission proposes? That's the big question.
Well, it seems as if Washington is pretty much choreographing a change of regime in Haiti with the expected change of regime, i.e. Hillary Clinton at the helm, in 2017 here, mm-hmm. so that things remain remarkably the same. It's the same thing, except she will now be president of the United States. By the way, has anybody in Haiti, has any organization in Haiti, or even outside of it, suggested that what is in order, in the same way that this provisional entity was formed to look at the integrity of this electoral process, has any such committee been formed, or has any movement been made toward getting a full-fledged investigation into the Clinton Foundation's operations in Haiti? You mentioned in one instance alone, in the aftermath of the earthquake in 2010, $13 billion with a B, still unaccounted for. We still have the question of the how did Hillary Clinton's brother get a license to mine gold? How did all these lands, the right to purchase them and develop these fronts that are posing as economic development projects. Has any such thing been initiated, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. And again, that's the problem, is that in this country, the capital, the wherewithal to do such an investigation, to have the investigators and get access to the documents, et cetera, and have the, rapport of forces necessary to really do this type of digging and exposure. Sure, the Carter Institute or Foundation, whatever it's called, I think.
Oh, did we lose you? Oh, gee. Well, he was driving, so it's possible that he ran into a dead zone. It happens. So hopefully we'll get back with him shortly. But you can see the connection here. The connection is so clear that the United States and its system, remember I told you it's not about individuals anymore, it's a system, an ingrained system. What the Obama administration is doing in Haiti is no different from what Bill Clinton did in Haiti, what Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, did in Haiti, and as the presumptive presidential candidate or the presumptive next president is proposing to do in Haiti. The statement from the State Department has already indicated the attitude. There is no difference in orientation at all between the Obama administration, which has, as Kim put it, a very soft fist in an iron glove. So it is a very consistent attitude toward Haiti. The main interest in Haiti is in its resources, including its people, who are a source of very cheap labor, their land, everything on it, in it, over it, and around it. This is how it works. And a very tight circle of very influential people working hand in glove with self-annihilators in Haiti, cooperating. This is what they do to an entire country, subjugating it at all these different levels to tremendous hardship, tremendous disadvantage, and wrecking any semblance of democratic order, which had been, of course, as you know from your history, hard won in Haiti. The first republic led by former slaves who revolted against foreign domination. Well, that brings us to the end of this segment. We're trying to get Kim Ives. We will probably get him back again during the following week, next week. But we thank him very much for being with us today. These things happen. He was driving and talking. Oh, he's back. Okay. Kim, we lost you there for a minute.
Well, you know, in fact, this is something we can blame, in fact, on climate change, Utrice. It is so hot right now, or the temperature is really rising here in New York, and I had my phone on the dashboard as I was speaking to you, and it became so hot that it shorted out.
Oh,
and
wow.
Stopped working. Yeah, so this is what lies in our future. All our gadgets are going to start to overheat.
So could you summarize for us what you think will be the focal points in the very near future? This five-member independent council, having made its recommendation, which is not legally binding, but it is a suggestion. They don't have the legal power and authority to enforce what they have to say, and they are calling, or their recommendation is that the election, so fraught with fraud, be redone. What should we be on the lookout for, say, in the immediate future?
Well, you know, the thing is, Utrice, Haiti really needs a revolution. And what President Prévert is trying to do is something very incremental. He's trying to do what they call in Creole a jouet intelligence, an intelligence game. And I asked him in the interview I made with him two or three weeks ago, I said, what about the parliament? Why aren't you looking at the fraud there? And he said, oh, no, you know, we can't call them contested. We're not going to look at the parliament. Well, this is precisely what's going to happen. I think his mandate is up on June 14th. That's 120 days he had to carry out elections. I think this parliament, who is mostly pro-Martelly, they're going to ditch him. They're going to get him out of there because of this commission's report. And they're going to maybe try to put in the prime minister, a guy called Enoch Jean-Charles, who's much closer to the Martelly people. And so I think we're looking at a period of real instability for the next 3 to 6 months at least, as the right wing and Washington together, along with maybe Hillary Clinton, as you say, try to push back against this popular uprising, which really began in the aftermath of those two elections on August 9th and October 25th, and succeeded on January 22nd in this incredible 10-mile-long march, which went up the Delma Road in Port-au-Prince. So They're going to try to push back this uprising, and I think that it's going to be a real battle. And I don't know how it's going to end exactly, but I think the people have an awful lot of momentum and determination.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Kim, for bringing us up to speed. Always an authoritative accounting of what's going on in Haiti and in the Haitian diaspora. And I thank you for the work that you do so consistently on point. And you are able to educate us about what's going on in Haiti, and you linking us with what's happening here. So it's not an isolated event. This is the beauty of the reports that you do. We are able to understand the connection between what's going on someplace completely different and what's going on here. It's the same story.
Well, I always like to say Haiti is the other pole of this hemisphere, the country founded by slaves that freed themselves against the slave owner state until this day that we live in here, Yatrice.
Thanks so much for being with us again. We'll take this break and come back and talk about a nice birthday today, right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and today, officially, is my birthday. Yay! Now, normally, for years and years and years, I lost count. I never, ever remembered my birthday. It just was not a big thing. And invariably, it would come to me that it was my birthday when people would call and say, hey, happy birthday. And I go, oh, gee, it is my birthday. Okay. I just never got excited about it. And today, I'm a little bit excited, although I was trying to be very, very low key. But I did get a couple of calls saying, happy birthday. And I said, okay. I'm yielding. I got a beautiful text message, and it just warmed up my day and got me started in a really wonderful spirit. So I want to start off by saying thank you so much. And you're listening to the voice of a very grateful, humbled person. Because the birth part of birthday means so much to me in a very symbolic way, because literally, as I shared with you, I am dealing with a pretty serious health situation, stage 4 cancer, and it came out of nowhere. The diagnosis came out of nowhere. And out of the blue, I had to get it together. You just have to understand things in a different way. You can't place yourself above certain things that you can't control. You realize the limits of your power, the finite nature of life. You get all esoteric in your approach to life. But the main thing is, I get really, really turned on now by having a meaningful life. That's it. That's my big kick now. I'm interested in a meaningful life. Whatever it is, it should have some meaning to me. Otherwise, I'm not interested. And so, on a day like this, I'm just grateful to be up. I like the feel of my feet on a cold floor. I like a lukewarm shower. I like simple stuff. I'm not interested in all these things. I've given away most everything because they're not important. And believe it or not, that has been my whole life. I'm just not into things. I like connections with people, genuine people, who bring something positive into my life, and hopefully I do the same in return. You try. I don't get all complicated about life. It's a straightforward thing. Make each day count. Try to be a decent person. Try not to hurt anybody. Try to help where you can. And basically, you know, just go through the experience of life with a joyful heart and a good attitude. And you'd be okay. Sometimes people have asked me, well, you know, aren't you scared? No, I'm not. I'm not scared at all. But I consider all the time how lucky I have been and still am to have people in my life who are genuine and who have been stalwart soldiers who really care about me. And I hope they understand that I really deeply care about them. And that's all that matters to me. And doing the work that I love to do and that I think I was put here to do. We had a conversation yesterday with Clara from Philadelphia, and she was talking about, she was wondering out loud whether what she considered her work, her activist work, of dealing with people on a one-on-one basis was enough, if you will, or whether it would create enough of an impact. I said, don't worry about that. The most important thing is to understand that you are doing precisely what you should be doing, what you are impelled or compelled to do. And you perhaps are doing really good work by going one-on-one with people as opposed to going on a mass scale with people. Because your work probably is intended to have that kind of impact because you're changing attitudes, and that is best done the way you're doing it. So don't question. Don't question yourself. But see that you are doing the work you were meant to do. And that should be an eternal sense of satisfaction to you. So that's what I say to everyone. Give meaning to your life. Don't worry about the small stuff and irritating people and all that stuff. just put that out of your way. And get on with the really exciting part of life, which is, what are you here to do? And are you doing what you're here to do? Do you feel convinced that you've reached that point where you are doing what you were here, put here to do? And that, if you get to that point, you're good to go. You're good. Don't worry about anything else. So on this day, I say thank you to everyone who has contributed something very positive to my life. And I'm hoping that in some way I've returned a measure of goodness to them through the work that I do. I enjoy it. And I like the idea that I feel fulfilled and I'm not afraid of anything. I really am not. I've gotten over that. I got over that real early because we weren't allowed to get afraid of most anything. We were supposed to just keep plodding away. That's what we learned as kids from our parents. Fear is not a good trait to have. So you're hearing from a very grateful person. I'm really, really sincerely grateful for the fact that I have life, that I'm able to live the way I want to, that I am trying my best to honor the investment made in me by so many people in so many different ways. I feel very special and very blessed that they selected me. They didn't have to pour the best they had to offer into me. And I feel an obligation to do the same. And I'm saying, this is what the revolution is. Finding the best of yourself and pouring it into somebody else. And passing that genetic material along. That's what we have to do. The odd thing that I discovered is that our engineer, Jesse Funk, we share the same birthday. And I want to thank him for being such a great engineer and for having such a very pleasant demeanor. Even when things, you know, this is the electronic world, things go crazy. But he's very calm and reassuring, and he keeps me calm and reassured. A good example is just what happened not too long ago. We lost Kim, and there's no frantic anything. We can manage that. And life goes on. And it's a great, great thing to have someone like that working with you. So I thank you, Jesse, for your engineering skills and for sharing my birthday, sharing the same day with me. So we'll take some calls at 888-874-4888 and hear what you have to say. It's just, I say thank you so much, really. I don't get excited about birthdays. I really don't. But I just felt a need to say thank you for all your good wishes and your prayers and your support. I want to thank Gary for his attention to me, Luann Pennessy for her attention to me, Dr. Arthur Lewis for his attention to me. So many people who have placed themselves in service to me and to my health and to my sustained my ability to enjoy health, good health on a sustained basis. So I thank you sincerely for that. I thank the listeners of this program for your consistently high level of engagement on this program. And I thank you for the courage of sharing your ideas freely, speaking freely and frankly, and with great respect for each other. I thank you for that. I thank you for considering the work that you do and considering the work that you must do to find that sweet spot in your life of being content and contented with where you are and what you're doing. And if you're not yet doing what you're supposed to be doing or what you think you're supposed to be doing, but that you're making the effort to get there, that's great. So that's all I have to say on this occasion. I'm going to have a great day today. I'm going to just enjoy the day. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Hi, Professor. How are you doing?
How are you doing? How are you?
Okay. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Yeah. A new life, huh? We just had to live one day like it's our last day. That's all we have to do.
Correct.
Yes. And I wanted to say two things. One is about Kim Ive. Kim Ive, I don't know if he still has a program on WBAI, but he used to have a program. And at one time I called up, and he hung up on me because I said to him and the gentleman that that works with him, they work together on that show about Haiti. I think it's called, he used to call, I think, Haiti Liberté, or that's his newspaper maybe.
Yes.
But I said to him that they will be able to solve the problem in Haiti. It will be for the Haitian people to arm themselves and take the people out of the country the way that they did it before. So I was very surprised today when I heard him saying that only a revolution will solve the problem. And well, I was very surprised.
Well, people change in outlook. And it's quite possible that, you know, what he offered was an analysis of where he saw things going, which was a question I asked him. Where do you see things going? And that's the direction he said he saw things going in. Thanks, Ali, for your call, and thanks for your good wishes today.
Yeah,
New Jersey, Fidel, you're on the air.
Yes, Patrice, hello. I just wanted to call and wish you a very happy birthday.
Thank
and
you so much.
Also, you're very welcome to also let you know that that was a beautiful message of gratitude. And I think that that's one thing that we should always keep in mind is be grateful. So that
yeah.
was very gracious and absolutely beautiful. And I wish you all the best going forward. I listen to you when I can, and I'm so glad that I was listening to you today when it is your birthday. So a very warm happy birthday, and all the best to you, comrade.
Thank you so much, Fidel. I certainly appreciate your message and your kind thoughts. Bobby and Lars from the show Let's Create a Better World, you're on the air.
Hi, Lucy. Happy birthday to you and to
Thank
Jesse,
you.
Who you're right. He does a good job, Jesse does. And your show is great. We love it. Even though I have my own show, I listen to Gary and I listen to you daily.
Thank you. But
I wanted to thank you for all the good work you do, and I wanted to also invite you to be on my show on June 16th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time is when I do the tape. And then the show will come on Saturday the 18th at 3 p.m. Eastern, no, at 2 p.m. Eastern time. I'll get all the information to you and see if you can fit your schedule for that date, okay?
Sure. I'll be happy to. You can send me a note at leadstories, L-E-I-D stories, at gmail.com, and you'll hear from me.
I'll do that. Thank you so much again. Happy birthday to you and Jesse.
Thank you. Thank you, and I'm sure Jesse says the same thing. Thanks so much. So that brings us to the end of our program. Oh, well, we have a couple more calls coming in. We might as well sneak them in. Let's see who's on. Veronica from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good day.
Good
I was
day.
Thinking of you and Paul Robinson, my love. And I'm looking forward to you living to be 107, celebrating stage 3, then stage 2, then 1 till... I don't know what you people are talking about. That's the past and leave it in the past.
107 years old is my goal. Okay.
You're limitless. So I am looking forward to Communiversity June 9th, beginning again in the spirit of Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, and we will win. We will win. We will win. I thank you very much, Professor. I appreciate you, and I love you. Have
Thank
a wonderful
you so much,
day.
Veronica. I really, really appreciate your kind thoughts. Thank you so much. Well, that brings us to the end of the program today. Thank you so much for your good wishes and your kind thoughts and your prayers and your support. And I want you to know these things keep me going. And I get the reaction all the time. are you okay? You're running around like nothing has happened to you. Well, of course, that's my mentality. Nothing is happening to me. I just got to keep moving. Just keep moving one foot in front of the other, and hopefully everything will all work out. Stay tuned. Coming up next, NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege, I mean that sincerely, to be in your company every day, Monday through Friday at this time. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Dr. Gerald Horn will be with us. We'll be talking about a number of things on the global level, some at the national level, but you know, it's always a great thing when he's with us and he gives us an entirely different take on major news and developments. So look forward to that. Next week we have a series of really good programs scheduled, so we'll continue the work that we do. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you again. And thank you even more. We'll see each other tomorrow. And happy birthday, Jesse. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.